Welcome to Fourth Stream Radio, where we consider concepts to help on your quest to a satisfied mind. And today, Dave and I are talking about a heart of strength in the face of major adversity. And we are going to review the lives of Elijah and Elisha for some incredible examples of strength in the wilderness, which is where we sometimes find our own lives.
Well, the beautiful thing about Elijah and Elisha is that they, you know, they're kind of preparing huge things that are going to happen in the future. They're the first, kind of the first prophets, and they're called the speaking prophets because they don't have their own book. But there's so much a picture of Christ and of John the Baptist. And so the preparation that is going in, that God is preparing in order for the fullness of times to come about, Elijah and Elisha are such key figures in all of that. It's pretty neat, really.
Well, I think it's interesting when you look at, and I'm going to tell a little bit of a story of Elijah, how he has this incredible thing that God does through him, and then he heads straight to the wilderness in sort of a depression. He's under a king that at that time named Ahab, and they just have a terrible relationship because Ahab's prophets tell him all the things he wants to hear, but of course Elijah tells him what God wants him to hear, and it's never the same, but they have this relationship that's really troublesome. And finally, Elijah says to Ahab, "You get your prophets, and I'll be my prophet for my God, and we'll build an altar, and we'll have a bit of a contest." So they bring in Ahab's 400.
See who's going to win.
He brings in his 450 prophets, and then we have Elijah on the other side.
So it's 450 to 1. Do I have this right?
With a lot of onlookers. And so they build together an altar, and he says, "You go first." So they start praying and asking, you know, the god of Baal. They ask Baal to show up and consume
Baal,
this
bad,
oxen.
God, good.
Yes, this ox that they have on the altar. They're asking God to come down and just consume and start the fire instead of them starting it. And so they're dancing on the altar. Pretty soon, you know, Elijah's mocking them, saying, maybe he's in the bathroom, maybe he's on vacation. Pretty soon they're cutting themselves. Finally, they have to give up.
It's pretty gruesome.
So it is gruesome. So Elijah rebuilds it, the altar that has kind of been torn down, digs out a trench around it, and says, pour water on it. So they keep pouring water on it until it's soaked, until the trenches are full. And then he earnestly prays and says, God, basically, please show up. The I am to show yourself to all these, show yourself to be the true God. And God shows himself by burning up the altar, the stones, the ox, the wood. He burns the entire thing down to nothing.
I think the flames, don't they lick up the water that's
yes.
in the trench?
Yes. And so, of course, all the people, all the onlookers are bowing to the great I am. But then Elijah kills the 450 false prophets. This is an
How did he pull that off?
I do not know. But what's incredible about this is that God shows up so much. You know, that wasn't Elijah who did it. It was God who showed up through Elijah. And the next thing we know, a little bit later, he's in the wilderness in this incredible depression, wondering where God is, why he's left him alone, why, you know, he's lonely in the midst of that. And that happens to our lives.
Well, I wrote down a note here. Do you ever feel like you're just a speck in the ocean,
yeah.
a drop in the bucket, a wrinkle in time? Mm-hmm. You know, you get the idea. But when humans look for meaning, it can seem futile because of circumstances or our obscurity and the incredible limitations of being human. And Elijah definitely experienced that, and he had to call out to God and rely upon God because he was in really difficult circumstances.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to see what God did through his life. You know, he healed people. He raised people from the dead. He fed people. And you were talking about him being a type of Christ. And all of a sudden you go, yes, Jesus did these things. It is really interesting to see the correlations.
And it's remarkable that for people who were searching the scriptures and searching the prophets, that they didn't look at Elijah and Elisha and go, oh my goodness,
mm-hmm.
look what's unfolding here before our eyes.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to read about Elijah and Elisha, they're kind of tucked in right at the end of 1 Kings and then into 2 Kings, all the way through about chapter 7. So 1 Kings 17 through 2 Kings 7, and that's where their stories are told, and it's filled with challenges, faith, and supernatural pictures. You just brought out one of them, Bernadette, about God's truth and kindness. In fact, remember when we went to Mount Carmel and where that allegedly happened, at least the site of that, and you look out into the Valley of Jezreel, which is where the final battle is going to happen, and you just sit there and you go, wow, this is where Elijah was with the prophets of Baal. Well, there are a number of things, you know, that you could tell a lot of stories and look at a lot of different stories related to Elijah and Elisha, but...
Well, and it's true. You know, I say this about a lot of things that we do. It's a page-turner. You just can't help it. You get started in 1 Kings, and cannot... You're just like, oh my gosh, it's unbelievable.
But today we want to finish off with just some of the integrations and some of the conclusions that come from an understanding of Elijah and Elisha, because that might motivate you to see it more from a prophetic perspective as well as fulfillment. And one of my favorite passages, particularly related to family life, is found in the book of Malachi, which is the last book in the Old Testament. You thought I was going to say the last Italian prophet, Malachi.
I was going to have to roll my eyes.
I'm not going to pull that one out. But it says in Malachi 4, "Behold, I'm going to send you Elijah the prophet before the coming great and terrible day of the Lord, and he will turn the hearts back to from the fathers to the children and children to the fathers." And it's how they were going to be delivered. So, you know, sending Elijah before the coming day of the Lord was going to impact society on a deep root level.
So is this a thing that was happening then or a thing that's going to happen in the future?
Well, I think it's a prophecy of, you know, he kicks off that kicks off the 400 silent years, so-called silent years. And that is broken by kind of the last Old Testament prophet, which is John the Baptist, really, if you but he's the voice of the one crying in the wilderness. So I think it was specifically referring to what was going to begin to happen with the coming of the Messiah, and how you know, it was kind of going to be a whole new world once Messiah had come to the earth.
Yeah, I read that and I thought, I really don't know. Is this talking about the end times?
Well, and then they get into a conversation. He gets into a conversation Jesus does with the disciples, and they ask him the question, you know, who was John the Baptist? And he says, if you're willing to accept it, John himself is Elijah who is to come. So these prophecies and this picture that was painted, Jesus himself is saying this is what that prophecy was talking about. He's the voice of the one crying in the wilderness, and I am the one he is preparing the way for.
So he wasn't saying Elijah was actually going to come.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. But, you know, several translations say that. So I find that confusing sometimes.
Well, you know, and Elijah does show up. So, you know, little bit later.
He does. And we're going to talk about that.
A little bit later in Matthew. But so let's table that full answer to that question, because it's interesting, because he's obviously speaking prophetically, metaphorically, but he, I think, is speaking physically about what was happening through John the Baptist. This is kind of a cool passage. It's out of Romans 11. And it talks about, it kind of looks back to 1 Kings 19 when Elijah was struggling so much with Jezebel. Jezebel, bad.
Ahab's wife, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Ahab, bad. Jezebel, worse.
And it says, God has not rejected his people whom he foreknew. Or do you not know what the scripture says in the passage about Elijah and how he pleads with God against Israel?
Against Israel. Why?
Well, just because of, you know, Israel's heart. I mean, Israel had rejected God, but, you know, Jezebel was a representation of what was happening. You know, this is after the time of the judges. You're in the time of the kings. Things are not looking good. So, you know, he's appealing to God because of the sin of the people.
Okay.
Because they're embracing the Baals. I mean, they're just, you know, looking at the false gods around them and saying, better. James chapter 5, well, in the passage you talked about in 1 Kings 19, before I get into James, then he said, I've been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts. You can kind of feel the crying out here. Mm-hmm. For the sons of Israel have forsaken your covenant, they've torn down your altars, and they've killed your prophets with the sword. So that's pretty bad.
And that's what, finish.
And when I alone am left, and they're after me now to take my life away as well.
And that's what depression does, doesn't it? Satan gets us isolated, and then we believe we're completely alone. And Elijah honestly thought he was the last one standing in Israel. But in Romans, it says there were 7,000 who hadn't turned away from God. Somehow, either Elijah just couldn't see them, or he just felt so alone, had become so isolated, he wouldn't think about it.
Well,
he wouldn't admit it.
He was in a tough situation, mm-hmm. and it was very personal. You know, Jezebel wasn't going for prophets in general. She disliked Elijah, and she wanted to, mm-hmm. to take his life.
She was after him.
She was pursuing him. Mm-hmm. In James 5, verse 17, this is a cool thing related to Elijah when you think about hope. And when you make your home in God, you know, that whole account you just talked about, you know, Elisha talked to God, and then God came and appeared to him, and he asked the same question at the beginning, and he asked the same question. He says, "Why are you here, Elisha? Mm-hmm. You know, is there something that I haven't explained to you already?" But he does respond to him. And this is cool because Elijah was a man with a nature like ours, and he prayed earnestly that it would not rain, and it did not rain on the earth for 3 years and 6 months. And what I like about that is that, you know, Jesus was God. Mm-hmm. Elijah was a prophet, but he was totally a man without the God part like Jesus had. And so when I think about praying about things that are tough, mm-hmm. because Elijah was faced with some really difficult circumstances, the people of God were disobedient, he was being personally pursued. I can find hope if I make my home in God. And sometimes that involves being in the rocks while the storm goes by.
Yeah, I love the end of that verse too. Then he prayed again and it did rain. You know, the story in 1 Kings is that after this happened with the Baal and the 450 prophets, they're still on the mountain and he says, okay, now it's going to rain. So he prays. He bows his forehead to his knees and prays earnestly, but he has to do it 7 times. Each time he sends his servant to go look at the horizon and says, is it coming yet? No, it's not coming. So he prays again. He does that 7 times. Finally, the 7th time, the servant says, yeah, I see a little cloud out there about the size of a man's fist. And he says, that's it. And he tells Ahab, you better get off the mountain because the rains are coming. And they got off just in time. So, you know, it's just interesting, that whole story, just how that all works. And he's a man just like me, and I have a hard time believing that.
We're kind of blasting you with the whole Elisha story right here. And so I kind of want to wrap it up. Hopefully we're whetting your appetite to get in there and read again something that mm-hmm. you've seen before, or maybe there are things in there you haven't considered related to Elijah and Elisha. This is out of Luke chapter 9. Some 8 days after these sayings, he took along Peter and John and James, and he went up the mountain to pray. And while he was praying, the appearance of his face became different. His clothing became white and gleaming. And behold, 2 men were talking with him, and they were Moses and Elijah. So not only did Elijah show up, but Moses was there for the party as well, mm-hmm. who, appearing in glory, were speaking of his departure, which he was about to accomplish in Jerusalem. Now, Peter and his companions had been overcome with sleep, but when they were fully awake, they saw his glory and Moses and Elijah being transfigured there with him. Wow.
Yeah, I just have tons of questions about this amazing passage, but just real quickly, number one, what were they talking about? You know, we have no glimpse into that, but you know they weren't talking about the weather or what was, what were they talking about?
Were they
about?
Dreaming or hallucinating, or what exactly was happening?
And why were the disciples sleeping?
Yeah.
I mean, did God put them asleep, or was it just because they'd been so busy, you know, watching miracles, learning, late nights, early mornings, climbing the mountain, did that all just make them exhausted?
Well,
I don't know. I have a lot of questions.
And what a thing to awaken to. You know, you've mm-hmm. got Moses, who represents the law. You've got Elijah, who represents the life that is to come in Messiah. And then you've got Jesus. It's like the whole story there. Hey, forestream.com, collection of resources to help you and those you know experience the freedom of a kingdom life. If you'd like to listen to today's program in its entirety, go to forestream.com and click on the radio button.
Together, we are finding hope at forestream.com.
Hey, thanks, Bernadette.
You're welcome.